And the last word, but of course not because there'll be discussion, is our final panellist, is Sethi Fridges, whom I first met 7 or 8 years ago when she was directing the MA in Nanotechnology and Business at Cambridge, is that right? And who is now the director of the Director General of the Nanotechnology and Industry Association, and is based in Brussels. Steffi, thank you very much.
Thank you, Nigel. Thank you very much for the introduction. The 7-year reference was quite unnecessary. Means that every cell in my body has now reconstructed itself once since I started doing this, so I'm not quite sure what that means. I believe that this last statement that Jeff made in the two opposing parties when it came to the labeling guide, mentioning industry specifically, you're all hanging onto your seats to now see what the controversial industry position is. And I shall hopefully serve you in that one. Again, I have a few more slides than I have times, but I am known to be speaking very fast, so hang on to that one. You will soon be out of this. First of all, who am I? Who are we to talk about this to you? We are an international organization, and we reflect very much what nanotechnology is. You might have gathered from what you heard in the first three panelists talking about, and then a little bit more what Jeff and Peter talked about, that there is no such thing as one nanotechnology. We're talking about a multitude of different technologies applied in a different way. What they all have in common is they're working on a certain length scale, but that's about the only thing they have in common. So that was definitely something you took away from seeing various different talks about the applications that we're seeing in nanotechnologies already, and here it is out there. We're not talking about just one technology. We're talking about an enabling technology that already goes into existing market sectors and might give rise to entirely new market sectors, but it's never going to be confined to just one industry sector. So that is why we are sector independent, and we certainly are talking about a supply chain issue here as well. We're talking about nanomaterials that are made at the very beginning of a manufacturing process, those that are then incorporated into products later on, and we're talking about final products on the market as well. What basically makes the underlying mission of the Nanotechnology Industries Association, NIA, is that we're proactively engaging with all the stakeholders, predominantly with the policymakers and the regulators, also working with consumer associations and NGOs, in order to make sure that whatever it is that we see as the need to make everybody happy with the ongoing innovation in this area doesn't stifle innovation to an extent that particularly small and medium-sized companies, which we need so badly, which hardly ever have a voice and a lobby for themselves, but also larger industries, don't stop commercialization. So I've taken the words that I was given in the title of this conference series, the Revolution, Regulation, Responsibilities, and you will find that I've indicated on the top right-hand corner of the slides that what I'm talking about here is what exactly is nanotechnology. Is it really a revolution? The way that we are talking about nanotechnologies, as I just said, we're looking at it as a supply chain service we are doing. We are covering everybody down the supply chain from those who are making the nanomaterials, and you can see some SEMs there and high-resolution micrographs of nanomaterials. We are working with those that are putting the nanomaterials into their intermediate nano-enabled products and those that are selling the final products on the market. And then you will know companies that do the entire supply chain in-house. L'Oreal is an example. They do everything from research and development to being the brand owner of the final product that you buy off the shelf. We also have the supporting technologies companies. Detector technology, characterization and analysis is absolutely vital. I will tell you why in a couple of slides, because without those, we wouldn't be knowing what we are doing on the nanoscale, and we would not be calling it nanotechnology. Take my word for that one. And it is also that a lot of nanotechnology is now enabling the better generation of detectors and monitors. And then finally, the advocacy services that we are doing on a global scale, working with American companies, with Australian companies, with companies across Europe. So here is a plot that comes out of a 2006 publication when there was a forecast made as to how big the nanotechnology market was going to be. And I know that Peter is now smiling within himself again by finding out that years after we kept showing this slide, which is basically a little sister of a famous research market research company, Lux Research, prediction, saying that from the 30 billion that nanotechnology products were creating in 2005, the market within 10 years was going to grow to 3.6 trillion. Now, the way that this is assessed, and you find every market analysis company is doing that differently, if you put a nanomaterial into the front bumper of your car, what counts towards the final number is the value of the car. And that is why we are now seeing nanotechnology having, in some aspects, reached the goal. In other aspects, they're far away from the goal because you can see the multiplier in your market analysis immediately. Nevertheless, what this graph shows very nicely is that we are starting in 2005, and that is pretty much, we are around about on track when you look at these some of these bullet points on there. And we deliberately indicated in different colors the areas that we're defining as industry sectors. We have the medical and life science sector, we have electronics and optical devices, we have energy, environmental technology. You can break them down even further. But what it shows very nicely is that what we started with, the commercialization of nanomaterials, is replacing materials that we used all the time with much more defined, much more controlled materials. So instead of just using a ground powder in a cosmetic, we were using a defined, controlled size material which did only what it was supposed to do and was sufficient on the resources we're using for that one, and which also then created a much better use of the material and waste that material might create. So what you can see, we started off with replacing known materials with much more controlled materials. That's what nanotechnology was used for in the first place. And then later on started developing much more technology, sophisticated applications like data storage, like cancer therapy and drug delivery. The question is, why did we start at the time when we did start? Again, here's the revolutionary aspect, because we could. We are doing nothing else than having followed a development on solid-state chemistry that underwent miniaturization. That is solid-state chemistry and engineering as you know it. We have followed a increasing complexity of the molecular scale of solid-state chemistry, and that pretty much combines us on the nanoscale in the area where biotechnology is functionable. This is the length scale at which enzymes do the business in your bodies, in which functioning in plants, any life is essentially more or less in that area functioning on the basis of that length scale.
So what
we're talking about here is application of biology as we see it and being able to reproduce it for our purposes in society. There is another reason why we're doing it now, why we didn't do it 50 years ago, why we are not waiting another 50 years to do it, and that is the invention of the scanning electron tunneling microscope, and that very much enables us, together with all the other advances in analytic equipment, to look at what we're doing now. We can actually now see nanoparticles, we can see how nanoparticles are built, we can see that they are not randomly shaped and randomly sized units, they actually follow a shape that is predicted by to them by the material that they are made of. And we can do that now. Here is an example on where we are already, and that is a very famous technology, and I don't think anybody's going to have a problem identifying with the uses of this technology. We're essentially copying nature that does photosynthesis, has always done photosynthesis, the very basis of life, and we've copied it into photovoltaics. Trevor Maynard had already given that example. So that is not a revolution, it's actually an evolution where we're just looking at what nature has done and we're now making it in an inorganic way. Now let me tell you why it was not a revolution for the industry either, and that is because industry first started using nanotechnology in order to meet their sustainability goals. They didn't use it to bring a new fantastic revolutionary product out on the market. They used it in order to address their safety targets by using new equipment, analytical equipment that was enhanced through nanotechnology, and they used it in order to meet their environmental, energy, and climate targets. Because nanotechnology enables people to apply it in agriculture, in building construction, communication, and transport, and specifically within the industrial processes, address things like greenhouse gas emission, using fewer materials, less resources in order to make a product that was made before, using fewer solvents, using less water, and increasing the fuel efficiency of your transport fleet. That is how large industry first used nanotechnology. Here is something about responsibility and the question, do we really need to regulate this? And I'm somewhat surprised that since we're talking about ethics, we don't have the media in this room. I would have liked somebody from the media talking about what they think their responsibility is with regard to the revolutionary aspect of nanotechnology that they like to talk about, the regulatory needs about nanotechnology that they like to talk about even more, and then the responsibility with regard to getting the balance right and not painting the wrong picture. I'm going to skip over that one because that is all on our website if you want to know. Here's an example I want to give you about the media being responsible when they're reporting on things. Here is an NGO in the US, the Environment Working Group, that a year before 2008, when this report came out, in 2007, had published a report by which they said, we would like to ban all nanomaterials, mineral nanomaterials from sunscreens. We don't think these are safe. A year later, this NGO, which has a large impact in public perception in the US, did not have any reservation about coming public and saying, in the last year we've done our own tests in our own labs, and we actually found that there is nothing better than having nanomaterials in your sunscreens, because you don't find a sunscreen that has any better protection against all the UV radiation, and you don't find one that lasts longer than that one. And I think all respect for them being able to recall their own publication a year before and saying we've done our own science. Unfortunately, that particular news headline never made it very far. The year before, when they were calling for a ban, had made it very far indeed. Here is our part of being proactive. We are one of the biggest providers of industrial input, both in money and in nanomaterials, to the OECD sponsorship program, the largest globally harmonized program to look at the potential risks of nanomaterials. You can't see the small print, but in the UK particularly there, we first set up a project that fed into this OECD sponsorship program worth about £3.5 million. We then set up another €250,000 project looking at another material, and that was launched last year, and we are now working on another partnership talking about 4.5 million covering some more of these materials on this overall agreed, globally agreed sponsorship program. And you can see all the countries that are involved in that one. I'm sorry about the colors not coming out very clearly, but it's essentially all the OECD member countries plus observing countries. So we also have worked on the responsibility of the industries in this area, and we were able to work with NGOs, consumer organizations, and the Royal Society on that one, Insight Investment, one of the large investment houses at the time here in London, and also some of Trevor's colleagues from the insurance industries. And again, that is something that we encourage our members to adhere to. And finally, speaking about the question, is it really a revolution we're talking about? I don't think it is. Do we really need regulation? We are reviewing that at the moment. Because of the pressure that's coming from different pressure groups, I don't think regulation can be avoided. But the question of responsibility is that we should all think about the responsibilities of all stakeholders. And as I say, I would have liked to see more of the different stakeholders in this room today, because we need to make sure that we are not stifling nanotechnology in its innovative capacity and in all the benefits that it could bring to environmental technology and healthcare, because there's no such thing as having a playground and making it entirely safe. This is a slide I nicked from a colleague from UCL. You have a playground with rubberized mats and with barriers, and in the end, there's no swings either. Thank you.